The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Friday, we survived the conventions, two conventions. Thank God there's no third party. I'd be dead by next Friday. Welcome to the Savage. Imagine if there was a legitimate third party and we had to go through another week of this. One more convention, more balloons, more party hats, more animated features, more reporters with headsets. Could you imagine anyone more depressed today than the conventioner going home on a small commercial plane, post-convention disorder, PCD? Suffered not only by the party apparatchiks, but the media types who have to go home now and get back to their normal life without the screaming and the yelling, you know. So here we are. Now let's all settle down. Let's get on with our life. There are some stories out there and some pretty good ones. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255 as usual. And here are the questions for this Friday edition of the Savage Nation. And this question is directed only at Democrats or independents. First question of the day is, have you decided to vote for McCain because of what you've seen over the last 2 weeks? Democrats only. Have any Democrats out there decided to abandon their party affiliation because of what they've seen over the last 2 weeks, both from Obama and from McCain? Number two, I have other questions. I'm going to save them. I would just rather save them for now. Let's make it simple. I've decided to use the KISS theory of talk radio. It seems to work very, very well for others in the business. The KISS theory works very well for others in the radio business, which is keep it simple, stupid. Because if you try not to keep it simple, what happens is the audience either gets mad at you, doesn't understand you, or whatever. So what I'm going to do is shed 100 points from my IQ for the remainder of the season, the election season, so I can be seen as a regular guy and a party loyalist. Because the last thing I would want you to do is think I'm a communist. I mean, after all, anyone who questions anything is now a communist to the true believers. I understand that. We're entering a very dangerous phase of American history. We may not recover from where we're going, by the way. If you think we're entering new freedoms, you're mistaken. We are not entering new freedoms. What I saw over the last 2 weeks tells me we're entering a new era in American media and in American politics, where very few people will dare step outside of the party lines. In the media, that's because they will not be given access to the Republican or Democrat Party if they dare ask a question. And in the media, such as my area of the media, where we're not invited to anywhere, nor would we attend, as Groucho Marx said, and he said it better than anybody, he would not join any club that would have him as a member, which I thought says it all. I mean, why would you go to a political sit down if you were invited to it? It means already you're a kept guy. Palin's eldest son to guard top commanders in Iraq. This is an interesting story. The long and divisive war in Iraq is about to resonate with presidential candidates in a way not seen so far in the campaign, says the HP. The sons of both vice presidential nominees are assigned to go there soon. Oh, that's nonsense. That is utter nonsense. You see, what they're trying to do here is they're trying to blunt the fact that Governor Sarah Palin's eldest son, Track, will actually go into a war zone to perform security duties for his brigade's top officers while the other guy from Delaware, whose name I continuously forget, and I don't do this on purpose. I do forget his name. Oh, here. Beau Biden, who is Delaware's attorney general, is a captain in the Delaware National Guard and will work as a military lawyer in Iraq. In other words, they're sending him over there, I guess, to prosecute and persecute the U.S. Army members who are actually doing something in a combat zone. Now, how they can compare Beau Biden's duties as a lawyer, a military lawyer, with Trek Palin, who is actually going to do something with a gun, I don't understand. But then that's the Associated Press. This is an interesting story. You don't know that John McCain's son, Jimmy, is a Marine who returned earlier this year from Iraq. I'm surprised that didn't come up last night. And that another McCain son, Jack, is a senior at the U.S. Naval Academy. I mean, you got to respect this. It is amazing. And by the way, Trek Palin is not going into a protected zone. They're going. He's being sent to Diyala, which they consider among the most dangerous of Iraq's 18 provinces. And it's a difficult to control area because it's heavily mixed with Sunni Arabs, Shiite Arabs, and Kurds. And Diyala, where he's going, was the fourth most violent of Iraq's provinces. So look, you know, they're not saying exactly where in Iraq Palin's or Biden's units are being sent. But let's stop already with the Biden already in the story. Why are they saying Trek Palin and Beau Biden are both going to Iraq? Because they lie. That's what the Associated Press does for a living. They're biased, only they pretend that they don't lie. Okay, they were biased against me and all of my problems. And now they're biased against McCain and Palin because they're all Democrats. How do you compare Trek Palin going into a war zone as a security guard for top generals and Beau Biden is going there as a lawyer? How do you do that? You do it if you have no shame. By the way, if you look back in history, this is an interesting side note. This is not the first time in history that family members of candidates and presidents have served in the military during wartime. In fact, it's very unusual that so few family members actually are there. During the Vietnam War, for example, President Johnson had a son named Charles Robb. That's his son-in-law. That wasn't his son. What are they talking about? He served as a Marine officer in Vietnam. I mean, that was his son-in-law. Dwight Eisenhower was the last sitting president to have a son in a combat zone. James Sheldon Dowd Eisenhower served during the Korean War. Now, here's an interesting one. Teddy Roosevelt and his distant cousin FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, each had four sons in the military during wartime. How do you like that? Well, so it's an interesting time in American history. This is the Savage Nation. Again, the phone number, 1-800-449-8255. First question, Democrats, have any of you decided to vote for McCain because of what you've seen over the last couple of weeks? Not only from McCain, but from Obama's side. Chris in New York on WOR, you open the show. Go ahead.
Hi, Mike. I'm absolutely convinced now. Look, I supported Hillary. Part of the reason I liked Obama. I'm not voting for him, chiefly because he adheres to black liberation theology. I'm disappointed that she didn't get the nomination, but I was struck by the authenticity of Governor Palin. I respect John McCain. I believe they're more to the center, and I've changed my mind. I'm not under Obama's spell, and I think more of us are going to be going that way.
Okay, fair enough. 1-800-449-8255. Let's see what's up on michaelsavage.com. I don't know what's up. I sent four stories today. I don't actually know which got posted. And frankly, I feel post-convention disorder myself. I don't know how you feel. I'm exhausted from it all, drained. So here are some of the headlines on my website. McCain promises to turn maverick side against partisan big government. I don't believe a word of that. I'm sorry. Sorry, don't believe it. That's nonsense. He is big government. I don't know what he's talking about. I'm sorry. I'm going to vote for the guy, but I can't take the rubbish. And there's something in his speech last night really disturbed me about the Mayflower. And did you hear the Mayflower part of the speech? Play the Mayflower speech.
In this country, we believe everyone has something to contribute and deserves the opportunity to reach their God-given potential. From the boy whose descendants arrived on the Mayflower to the Latina daughter of migrant workers, we're all God's children and we're all Americans.
How can you argue with that? So he's arguing, in other words, that the people who came over on the Mayflower were illegal aliens and they were interlopers who invaded America. Okay, I can understand that. They were not legal. You got to hand it to John. That was what he's saying is that the people who came over on the Mayflower were basically invaders. They were illegal aliens who invaded the country, which was occupied by the Native American. So now he's slamming the descendants of the Mayflower as well. Look, that's not the story. Do you understand that that's not the issue? The issue is not immigrants. It's not Latinos. The issue is legal versus illegal alien. That's all. And you know that, and I know that. And I'm sorry to tell you, I'm not happy with what I'm hearing because I know what's coming. You know, but I'm a realist. I've told you that I'm a realist, and I understand they're never going to deport 20 to 30 million people. But for me to really get that, you know, excited about this campaign, he'd have to say, I'll tell you what, we're going to split the difference. And that is this. I don't know what's wrong with you people, but before this election cycle started, every poll showed that between 80 to 85% of the American people wanted the illegal alien problem solved. And that didn't mean accepting them as citizens. It meant deporting those in prison, cracking down on the border, ending the anchor baby problem. It didn't mean suddenly embracing illegal aliens because we are all God's children. That's a given that we're all God's children. But we have a lifeboat that's full. That's the issue. Anyone who's been in an emergency room lately or seen what's going on in our schools or hospitals in general understands the problem we're having. And everybody knows that. And I don't understand how you people who know this are so suddenly accepting of a John McCain who has promised to grant amnesty to illegal aliens. I would have expected you to demand more from John McCain, and you can still do so. You can vote for the man, but you can tell him you're not going to back him on the illegal alien amnesty. The man almost lost his seat in Congress, don't you remember, when he tried to put forward the Kennedy bill, the McCain-Kennedy bill? 85% of the American people, that's Democrat, Republican, Independent, even Hispanic people who are here legally don't want the illegals running all over this country. They understand the dangers to the Republic. To suddenly now forget what you felt just a few months ago, even less than that, is part of this mass hysteria that is basically pervasive in our society at this moment because of two straight weeks of nonstop, massive government media complex propaganda. And once all this settles down, and once people start to really think again, they're going to have to demand more of John McCain, who I do hope wins the election. He must stop talking about being a maverick and actually act like one. He must stop talking about big government and start to say we're going to actually undo what George Bush did by closing down the Department of Education. I mean, you want some reality, then we have to have reality. 1-800-449-8255. There are other stories on michaelsavage.com. And by the way, a side note, I want to thank you people for flooding on my site over the last week and ordering Psychological Nudity, my book, because the orders are greater than I thought they would be. I have until – you want to hear something odd? You want to hear something that's kind of fortuitous? The printer has extended until the following date, the date that I can give the final print order. You know what? You want to hear the date? 9/11/2008. That's the final date I have to give the final print number. I'm telling you, there's a star over this book. I'll be right back. Savage. Country back, you hear? And a piece of paper, they're trying to make a citizen's arrest on the Republicans. Play the song, that's all. Thank God it's Friday. I'm going to collapse from this. Tomorrow's going to be a great day. Taking out a group on my boat. Normally I go alone. I'm a solo guy. I'm a recluse. It's going to be unbelievable. What? Stereo. I should get a boombox. What do you do when you entertain? I don't know how to entertain. I don't entertain. I'm a loner. What do you do when you entertain? What is required? Do I have to smile or something? No, it's going to be nice. We have a good P people, old, young, and infants going on the boat. For me, this is a milestone in my life, in my boating experience. I basically like to be alone. I do. I don't like to talk on a boat when I go out on a boat. To me, I got to talk about this for a second. I know you want to talk about McCain. It's fine. Obama, who you're going to vote for, we'll do that. But give me a break. It's almost the weekend already. And I just wanted to mention something. I don't know how people do their own recreation, but for me, recreation means recreation. And to be recreated, you need to start from the beginning. You need to be alone, solitude. So if I go out on a boat, it's a large boat. It's not a speedboat. A, I stay out of the sun. That's A. Anyone with brains understands that beyond the age of 4. And then, I can't talk on a boat. I don't go out on the boat. I can stay in the house to talk. I don't have a TV on my boat, for example. All new boats today, they want flat screens in every cabin. Now, why would you want a flat screen in a cabin on a boat? Why not stay home? Or a big stereo. That I could see. All right, I play Victory at Sea on my stereo when I go out. On the occasion I put a stereo on and all, I like to hear Victory at Sea. Could you play Victory at Sea for a minute? I really haven't heard it in years. Remember, da, 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 Roger. Forget it. They don't even know what I'm talking about. So we got an infant. Not an infant, a dog, a sandwich, a gabardine. Bring it on your magazine. An infant, a dog, a gabardine. It was 2008, approaching 2009. When across the vast seas, the U.S. Navy was spread so thin, it was a wonder that the U.S. could protect its interests anymore. And then, in the Caucasus, a shot was fired. A shot across the bow of the great U.S. Navy. And responding to this call, well, you fill in the blank. We are now in Georgia with our Navy. I love it. Maybe we could have an incident. The sinking of what ship? Okay, here's the history question for the day. Which ship was sunk in which harbor, which triggered which war? Whoever gets that right, whoever knows even a modicum of U.S. history, wins a free copy of my great autobiography, Psychological Nudity. Which ship was sunk in which harbor, triggering which American war? 1-800-449-8255. Also, Democrats and independents, have you decided to switch allegiances and vote for John McCain after seeing what you've seen over the last 2 weeks? This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. It is the Friday edition. What would you do without Michael Savage to kick around? What would you do without Michael Savage, the independent maverick, the only one left in the media, maybe the only one that ever existed? What are you going to do after I'm gone? Huh? Who are you going to kick around? Who are you going to kick around then? There'll be nobody left. You'll have just party animals on both sides of the aisle. I mean, if that's what you want, you already got that in the mainstream media. You want that in talk radio? No. Talk radio is not going to be here for very much longer. I don't. After this election, I don't care who wins. I tell you, I'm just not sure that freedom of speech can survive with the winds that are blowing in Congress right now. You know, that's my feeling, and that's why I say to you, I'm very worried about partisanship. I mean, a lack of partisanship. Because I've learned one thing, and if I learned anything in all my years of analyzing politics, which is since I'm 17, 16, whenever both parties get along a little too well, you can be sure of only one thing. The American people are getting screwed. And right now I see too much coziness, too much line crossing, too much blurring of the lines between the R and the D, and that's what worries me right now. On to the trivia question. San Francisco, KNEW, Rock. Go ahead, please. The question was, what ship was sunk in which harbor when and which war was started?
It was the Maine and Havana Harbor started the Spanish-American War in 1898.
You're right. You win a free copy of Psychological Nudity.
Now, thank you very much.
Where did you learn this little factotum?
Oh, I've been interested in what starts wars and why we get involved in foreign wars and so
that. Well, stay on the line, because this is going to involve a lot more than what I just said. When the USS Maine arrived in 1898 in Havana, nothing happened. But then it sank, in Havana on February 15, 1898, as a result of a serious explosion resulting in the deaths of 266 sailors. Now, the sinking of the battleship was attributed by the Spanish to an internal and accidental explosion. But in 1898, a naval inquiry reported that it was caused by a mine, and that triggered the war. Now, tell the listeners about William Randolph Hearst. Was he not involved in fanning the war flames?
Oh, absolutely. He wanted war. He gave that famous order to his reporter. He said, "You just get me pictures, and I'll get the war."
Right. So William Randolph Hearst spread the rumors that the ship was blown up by the Spanish, and as a result, we should go to war, and that was to sell newspapers. Correct or incorrect?
Correct. And since mm-hmm. then, we've learned that it was an internal explosion. I don't believe it was a. I think the final historical conclusion is that it was an internal. The armaments inside the main blew up and started a chain reaction, and it was blamed on the Spanish.
There's actually still controversy over what caused the explosion of the ship, but Spanish and loyalist Cuban opinions at that time said that the United States government may have intentionally caused the detonation on the USS Maine as a pretext to go to war with Spain. Now, I don't know what actually happened, but I know that a war was triggered by the sinking of the USS Maine. It triggered the Spanish-American War, and I've heard theories about other wars having been started in order to justify war, going right up to the Iraq War, which I don't believe, incidentally. I'm not one of those who believe 9/11 was an inside job. In fact, I'm positive it wasn't. But there are still such theories floating around, Rock. You know that.
Pardon me?
You know that there's such conspiracy theories floating around.
Well, of course. The thing is, we should seek answers. We should not dismiss anything that we don't agree with as kooky. We should look into the questions of why did they destroy the evidence? Why did the media?
I don't know. I don't have an answer for that. But I do know this. The reason I called my autobiography Psychological Nudity is because it strips bare the man who you're listening to on the show in more ways than one, okay? Now, if I'm going to be revealing parts of myself in this book that people may or may not know about, they may come to appreciate even more what it means to be a true independent and a real maverick, and that's me. And so that copy is going to go out to you when the book's ready to go October 15th. Stay in the line, Rock. Psychological Nudity is going to be on the way to you. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. We're not really talking about the Spanish-American War. We're talking about war and peace. And right now, I have a question for you. Are we at war or are we at peace? You know, when the book War and Peace was written, it was about periods of war and periods of peace. We're living in a very strange time in America. We're both at war and at peace. Are we at war or are we at peace? Well, we're in neither place. We're in another zone. We're in a place called War and Peace. You know what I'm saying? We're both at war and we're at peace. And that's an interesting story, you know. 1-800-449-8255, main question, Indies or Dems, have you decided to vote for McCain because of what you've seen and why? Let's go to San Francisco. Don, go ahead, please. Where's your vote going?
Yes, I'm going to vote for McCain reluctantly. I'm an independent. My wife and I have been listening to you since day one. I think we're your oldest fans. We think you're great. We know that everyone was mad last week about Palin, but if they know you, they know that you question things. You're not a sheep.
Well, thank God. I mean, that's the whole point. I've had people who claim they're loyalist listeners who are suddenly attacking me because I asked questions about a woman they never heard of a week before. What do they want me to do? Worship somebody because they just dug her up from somewhere? What's wrong with these people?
No, they're wrong, Michael. And I'm worried about McCain because of his immigration stance. And when he said about the judges last night, I don't even trust him on that. If some Democrat.
Whoa. What did McCain say about judges? Did we get that soundbite? Do we have that? What did he say?
Yeah, he said.
Uh-oh. Don, thanks for listening so loyally. 1-800-449-8255. So there's an independent who is going to vote for McCain. There's an independent who's listened to me for years. There's an independent who understands I'm a free spirit, open-minded man who asks questions about everything. And here's the problem. Many of you can't handle questions. Many of you don't even want answers. What you really want is something else, and I'm not the guy for that. There are others in the business who can give you what you want. And I'm not suggesting you never listen to me again, but maybe I'm not for you. Maybe if I demand too much of an audience. You have to leave this class and go to a reform school and talk radio, because this class called The Savage Nation is in some ways the most advanced talk radio show in the United States of America. And I'm not boasting. It happens to be reality. And if I ask too many questions, it blows a lot of people out of the water. They don't like it. They get uncomfortable. These are the true believers on both sides of the aisle. They want a fixed opinion on every subject because it's more comfortable for them. I was raised by a father who made me answer my own questions. And I'm going to tell you something. It wasn't such a bad teaching. And you should teach your children how to think. It's real simple. My dad did it with me. And I'm going to tell you again, this is an interesting story. It's short. I don't want to start sounding like the old man in the sea here. If I would ask my father any question, I don't mean such as, is there milk in the refrigerator? If I asked him a deeper question, he'd say to me, Michael, figure it out for yourself. I didn't know how to figure it out for myself. And I'd say, like, duh, what do you mean, Dad? Figure it out. He said, well, think about it. He said, let's think about it. And he'd start me from point A, and he'd lead me to come up with point D, or whatever it was going to go to. He taught me the rudiments of thought. The schools today, unfortunately, do not teach children how to think. In fact, I think they teach them not to question authority at all. They teach them to have groupthink. Gay, good. Gay marriage, good. Global warming caused by man in big car. Racism, homophobia, worst problems on earth. America, worst nation on planet. White man, no good. People of color, good. This is the kind of thinking that the children are being taught. This is not thinking. This is brainwashing. 101, Communist Revolution, 1960s. Warren, Supreme Court, wrecked America. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, David Souter, and the other radical leftists are a continuum of the 60s Communist Revolution on the Supreme Court. If Obama wins, he puts an ACLU lawyer on the Supreme Court. End of America as we know it. If McCain wins, at least we have a fighting chance. God bless America. San Diego, Mary, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, I'm an independent conservative, and I supported Romney. I don't know, Mr. Savage, that I'm going to vote, other than the Supreme Court nominations probably influencing my decision, and then I will vote for McCain. I think that Ms. Palin is basically just a good-looking conservative Obama, and it's all stagecraft. I have no confidence that she can lead us should something happen to Mr. McCain. And my basic outrage with this whole thing is that there was this hue and cry about Romney being a Mormon, and I'm not a Mormon. Now, where are all the evangelicals with even a fatherly admonition against teen pregnancy? They're all mum, blind sheep, not saying a thing. And this disturbs me as a mother of kids and teenagers.
I don't think you're alone. I think there are cracks in the crystal, and I think people are starting to raise similar questions. And anyone who does is considered not loyal to the cause, and also saying, oh, you're trying to get Obama elected. But as I say to you, long after the election, these questions will continue to be raised.
I can't send my children to public school, and I'm a product of it. I knew the answer to your question because I learned it in public school, a system that's now defunct as I knew it when I went to school in Chicago 40 years ago.
Oh, you mean about the sinking of the Maine leading up to the Spanish-American War?
But my daughter's in high school. There's no way she could answer that question as a product of the public school system. That's why I'm homeschooling now. It's ridiculous.
Well, the point I'm getting at is this. Upon the sinking of the Maine, newspaper owners such as William Randolph Hearst leapt to the conclusion that the Spanish people in Cuba were to blame, and they put it out in their newspapers. The newspapers practiced what came to be called, fill in the blanks, yellow journalism. Yellow journalism is what's being practiced today by the Associated Press, by the major league newspapers, which is why they're going out of business. The people have had enough of yellow journalism, and they don't want it. What is yellow journalism, Mary? Yellow journalism is propaganda, pure and simple. It's sensationalism to sell newspapers. In fact, he said, Hearst, when Hearst was informed by Frederick Remington, whom he had hired to furnish pictures, those were drawings, for his newspaper, that conditions in Cuba were not really as bad enough as he said they were, and they would not warrant hostilities, Hearst was allegedly heard to say, you furnish the pictures and I'll furnish the war. And as a result of this yellow journalism, the American people were whipped up into a frenzy. An American cry of the hour became, remember the Maine, to hell with Spain. And as a result of that, we went to war with Spain. And that's the problem with yellow journalism. And frankly, after these two conventions, I saw nothing but yellow journalism coming from the two parties. It's yellow journalism as practiced by the political machinery. And the fact of the matter is, we as the people have an obligation, never mind a right, to question both parties, Mary.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I there's no way I would ever vote for a liberal. I see the way the country's going, and I see our situation in Georgia. That's fanned by the same culprits that you're speaking of.
Aha. Uh-huh. That's why Mike brought up the sinking of the Maine. And that's why he is worried about it, because I see the same thing happening in the Caucasus right now as happened in Cuba. This was a provocation. Russia was provoked. Russia almost had no response other than this to a little pipsqueak puppet dictator who frankly said, now these are our provinces. What did they expect the former head of the KGB to do? What did they expect him to do, roll over to this puppet? I don't think so. That's not to justify what Putin did. It's to explain what Putin did from the point of view of the Russian people, not from the point of view of the jingoistic press. That's what I'm trying to get at. Anyway, that's a separate story. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. I'll be right back. Savage.
For all, up with home ownership, up with guaranteed retirement benefits,
up with peace, let Fredo take care of some
up
Mickey Mouse
prosperity.
Nightclub somewhere,
up with
I can handle that, I'm smart,
up with
I'd
Obama,
like
Biden, wake up America, wake up
I'm
America,
wake up
America.
The hairy forearms of New York serve you your coffee with a turning gesture, an offering that says drink, eat, enjoy. The wiry Italian in Vincent's Clam Bar, the one behind the greased-over register, the young kid connected who receives his deference from the spaghetti cook older than his gangster father, the spaghetti cook who looks like an old-fashioned doctor from the Bronx with clipped mustache. He actually pulls some noodles out of the pot and eats them as they cook, looking to the grimy ceiling for his tender answer. Well, they used to call it spaghetti. Now it's pasta at $10 a plate. The smoky windows of Romeo's Spaghetti now offers radios and knickknacks. It was 50 cents a plate then, in neon letters that you couldn't miss, even through a fogged-over window on a cold winter's eve. There was life. Marinara sauce that smacked to the sea. Noodles as long as your young arm. Meatballs as fluffy as your dream of them. Bread on the table you'd eat against your parents' admonitions that the meal was coming, the meal was coming. And men, some burly with black hairy forearms whose smiles scared you, and little skinny guys with the look of murder on their faces, and people who slurped their spaghetti straight to their mouths from the plate, one motion like Chinese shoveling rice at mouth with clicking sticks. That was gusto before it became a beer ad. That was taste before it became a synonym for fashion. That was spaghetti before it became pasta. Yep, that was it. When Pasta Was Spaghetti by Michael Savage in Psychological Nudity. For those of you, you don't even have to be Italian to like that poem. That's such a good poem. You know, every time I hear it, it gets better. I love it because it's a part of America that, well, is gone, frankly. And in some ways, you could say I'm a part of America that's going, gone. You should play Mel Allen now. That ball is going. It's
There's
gone.
It's a deep right field. That ball is going. It is gone. Barrett.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, that ball is going. It is gone. That's the conservative movement. That ball is going. It is gone. And it wasn't hit out of the field. It was just... Yeah, old conservatives never die. They just lose their... Okay, well, that's why I'm playing a poem now. Play the Tarantella for me, just for a minute, so I can catch my breath here in the radio studio.
Tarantella. Hey, Paulie, bring me the wine. Hey, Paulie, give me the wine.
I'm starting to feel I have to do a live performance again. I need to see my audience. I need to reach out to my live audience. Years ago, I remember there were, you know, some very big figures who used to do live performances in small nightclubs in order to be in touch with the audience. They still do it, some of them. And I understand that. And I used to do very small things in a local restaurant, a Fisherman's Wharf, for a while because I needed to meet the people. Believe me, it wasn't for the money. We provided a dinner and I did a show because I like meeting the listeners of the show. But I haven't done it for a number of years for security reasons and because of security reasons. But other than those reasons, it was only because of security reasons that I haven't done a live performance. 1-800-449-8255 phone number. This is Michael Savage, the Savage Nation. And, of course, I'll be with you all of today to bring you back from your depression, from your post-convention disorder, your PCD, which is being suffered by most political junkies across the spectrum. And the main question for this hour has been, have any Democrats or independents decided to vote for McCain because of what you've seen over the last couple of weeks? But there are other questions. Open mic to Mike. You know, we can talk about other things as well, and I hope we will. Oh, do I hope we can talk about something else, because after this election is over, there's going to be a long lag period where we have to become a talk show again, not a propaganda arm of either party, and not just simple announcers. You know, I don't think you people understand the difference between an announcer and a talk show host. Many of you who are angry at me, for various reasons, think that I'm an announcer. I'm not an announcer. I'm a talk show host. An announcer reads a script. An announcer gives you ideas that are not even his own. A talk show host gives you ideas that may or may not be his own and tries to convince you that his ideas have validity. I'm Michael Savage. I'm a talk show host proudly. The last time I was an announcer was in the first grade. The reason I was made the announcer in the first grade is because although everyone was poor like us, my mother was so proud of her little boy that she bought me a little blue suit. And since I was the only kid in the Bronx who had a blue suit at that time, the teacher said, Michael, come here. You're going to be the announcer. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Dino, a little rough on the transition there, but welcome to the Savage Nation. Play it up, a little Dino Martino.
Nel blu, dipinto,
dipinto del blu, felice stare qua tu, assù. Anyway, the reason I'm playing this is because I'm bored to death. The post-convention disorder syndrome, PCD, it's rampant. It has spread like a virus throughout America, PCDS, and it's a serious illness. And I really think that the government is not doing enough to treat and cure PCDS. In fact, I think that the government should, if George Bush can give $1 billion to Georgia, he certainly could give $1 billion to study the origins, the causes of PCDS, post-convention disorder syndrome. And I think that the victims of PCDS require government assistance. And I believe that this is a Republican and a Democrat problem. I think it crosses both aisles. If there was any compassion in this world, there'd be at least $1 billion given to the post-convention disorder syndrome. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I have in my hands a book that just fell out of my library. I was moving my library, one of my libraries, I have four of them, from one property to another. And a book fell out of the library that has some distant relationship to what's going on today. What's going on today is the desire to talk about anything except politics. So I have a book called The Book of Tea by Okakura Kakuzo, which I bought many years ago, and I'm going to read you one paragraph. It's called The Cup of Humanity, and it reads like this. Tea began as a medicine and grew into a beverage. In China in the 8th century, it entered the realm of poetry as one of the polite amusements. The 15th century saw Japan ennoble it into a religion of teaism. Teaism is a cult founded on the adoration of the beautiful among the sordid facts of everyday existence. Did you hear that? Teaism is a cult founded on the adoration of the beautiful among the sordid facts of everyday existence. Now, I'm going to pause right there. Anyone listening to this show, if you live in the most humble apartment, even a room by yourself in a single-room occupancy hotel, I will bet that you have a picture on the wall, maybe a picture from a magazine of something beautiful. If you are a very wealthy person, there is beauty on every wall and every corner, every bathroom. If you have enough money, you buy beautiful cars. You don't buy the beautiful cars only to show off. You buy those cars because you adore the beautiful among the sordid facts of everyday existence. When you go in your garage and you look at the lines of a beautiful car, the beauty of the lines of your car takes you out of the sordid reality of everyday existence. And ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, whether you know it or not, despite my capacity for anger and emotion and passion, I got to tell you something. If I can't move out of the sordid facts of everyday existence into the imagination and have some fun on the radio, I'm not going to be here in 2009 on the radio. I mean, I hope I'm here in the world, but I won't be on the radio because I refuse to become an announcer. There's a huge difference between a talk radio host and an announcer. Unfortunately, many of you don't know that what's going on in front of your eyes is the merging of the two, where many talk radio hosts are becoming mere announcers for one party or the other. And frankly, I'm not interested in that. If that's the direction that the medium is going in, I can't control it. I cannot fight the tide. But I will not cooperate, nor will I go lightly into the night, nor will I go quietly into the night of simply being an announcer on talk radio. This is a unique medium. I don't think you understand what happened in radio. Radio was never like this until the 60s, the late 50s, when some really great originals emerged, mainly out of New York City, but elsewhere. Talk radio hosts started to appear who took chances and started to give their opinions. And guess what? Audiences loved reality. They were tired of listening to announcers just reading commercials. They understood that we needed commercial sponsors to have a radio show. But if the show simply became one commercial after another with an announcer in between selling, let's say, political ideas or reading what he was told to read by the bosses, they didn't have much of a following. There was no audience for it. And people listened to music and sports. And then what happened after the reemergence, actually, or the emergence of talkers who took chances, was the growth in the talk radio industry, primarily in the late 80s, Rush came along. Then in the 90s, there were many other people. And all of a sudden, there was a tremendous spurt of originality and confidence in opinions. And the people embraced it. They loved it. They went crazy for it because they couldn't take ABC, CBS, NBC. They couldn't take the CNN because they knew it was all pre-digested and spat out by the little men and the Lilliputians in skirts and suits. And then the people started to really love it. And then what happened was the politicians got very angry. And they got angrier and angrier. And the politicians suddenly, mainly the Democrats, said, we can't have this. We cannot have talk radio hosts ridiculing us, criticizing us, pointing out our lies, our shenanigans, our outright crimes, because it's not good for business. And so what we have to do is we have to stop talk radio before it grows bigger. Now, thus far, it hasn't been stopped. Not officially and not legally. Nancy Pelosi and mainly Democrats, but make no mistake about it, there are Republicans who want to join in closing down this last gasp of freedom of speech in the talk in the medium called radio. I can name them, but that's not the point. The important thing for you to know is that's the way the tide is going. And what I've seen happen over the last 2 weeks, intimidation of talk radio hosts on both sides of the aisle who had to follow party line. Nobody actually told them they had to, but it was pretty much implied, you better follow the party line here or you're in real trouble here. Because your audience won't follow you. Your audience doesn't want you questioning anybody. Your audience wants you to either take one side or the other, or you're going to be out of business, Buster. They're going to leave you. Well, I didn't believe a word of it, because I still believe that talk radio is built upon the independent listener. It's not really built upon the partisan listener on either side of the aisle. The partisan Democrat, liberal, socialist, communist doesn't really listen to talk radio. There are some, but they listen mainly to try to get the other guys like me in trouble. But there's no large audience of Democrats who listen to talk radio. They listen to NPR, which is all propaganda all the time. In fact, it should have been closed down because it already is practicing the fairness doctrine. It never expresses a conservative, America-loving opinion, so far as I can tell. And if it is, it's occasional. It's thrown in just for effect. You have those outlets already. So the people who flocked to talk radio were largely the independents who lean towards the conservative side of the aisle. And what's happening now is that there's great pressure coming down, primarily from Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats, with the threat of the fairness doctrine, that you guys are going to go, we're going to close you down. And they're doing it to intimidate talk radio hosts into becoming self-censors. That's exactly what's been going on. And they've succeeded to an extent they can't even imagine. Without having fired a shot, just by threatening legal action, just by threatening the fairness doctrine, they got too many people in talk radio to start behaving like announcers. I must tell you that I am not an announcer. If I were an announcer, I wouldn't be in talk radio. There was a time in my life when I thought I wanted to be an actor. That was when I was 15, 16, 17, I don't remember. Guess what? I tried it out. I hated it. And the reason I hated being an actor was I could not read anyone else's lines. I couldn't remember them. I couldn't act them with any authority or belief because I didn't know what the lines even meant because I didn't write them. They weren't my ideas. An actor is someone who can fake believing in something, and they can do it so well that they convince us they actually believe it. And God bless them, because we all need actors to take us out of the ordinary. Some of them approach beauty and take us out of that ordinary that we're talking about. But by and large, you can't be an actor if you're strong-willed and actually believe in what you're saying. That's why so many actors sound like such big dopes when they start talking politics. And that's why so many talk show hosts look like big oafs when they start becoming actors. So having said all of that, I want to reiterate what I started to get at, which is that the Savage Nation has always been the expression of myself. It has always been my opinion. It always will be only my opinion. That's the Savage Nation. And now we come down to brass tacks, and that is the last few weeks. I'm not enamored of McCain. I think McCain is a compromiser. I think McCain is exactly the man who almost lost his seat in the Senate before he suddenly was picked up by the Republican Party as their man, because he is such a crossover compromiser and because he had a good narrative and story to tell. And the fact of the matter is, he's still the same John McCain who, frankly, had he not been picked by the Republican Party to be garnering this much attention, he probably would have lost his seat in Arizona because of his stance on one issue, illegal immigration, illegal immigrants. And I'm sick and tired of it. I am sick and tired of people saying subtly and directly, you've got to support him because otherwise you're supporting Obama. That's not true. I would never vote for a Marxist, socialist, Leninist party, which the Democrat Party has become. They're not Democrats. They're not the FDR party. They're not the JFK party. They are outright European socialists, and I'm not going there. I don't want to vote myself into an early grave. And the Democrats will take away from those of us who have, let's say, developed something, given something, created something, earned something, and give it to those who have not at a faster pace than will the Republicans. And so for a few slim reasons, I will vote Republican in this election, but reluctantly so. And every step of the way, and every day along that long path to that November day that I will go into the booth, I will demand more of John McCain than I have gotten so far. And I hope you do, too. This is Michael Savage, and I approve of this monologue. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is time to say goodnight to Napoli.
Buonasera, buonasera, buonasera. Bueno, bono, bella. Bella, bono, bueno. Welcome to the Savage Nation. What I like about Italian restaurants, everything's happy and good. Bella, bono, bella, bono, bueno, little bueno, bella, bella. Who doesn't like an Italian restaurant? Nobody. All right, thank you, Louis Prima. Welcome. How long did he live? All these guys with great passion. I have in my hand an hourglass here in the studio. It's a little thing I bought in, like, Bombay, you know, for a couple of bucks. And I always, as a kid, wanted an hourglass. I never was able to get one. So now I buy stupid things that I always wanted, you know, like an hourglass. And I'm trying to think about when did the hourglass, who thought of this? Who actually sat in the desert and watched sand fall off a dune or whatever? And he was so bored, it was like, you know, watching paint dry. I'm going to watch sand fall off a dune, and then he's going to figure out how long it takes, you know, to mark the time. Else you go out of your mind. That's what I'm figuring. So I have an hourglass, and theoretically it takes an hour. But, you know, I start to think about the symbolism of the hourglass and what it has to do with politics. And what does it have to do with the two candidates, the hourglass? We're about to initiate a president and a vice president. Why should we not insist that the candidates reflect on the hourglass? And why would I want my candidates to answer to me, Michael Savage, sitting in a room with me, not questions about politics, but about philosophy? We have an hourglass in front of you, Mr. Obama and Mr. McCain. Here's an hourglass. Now you can understand why they don't want to be on the Savage Nation. Because I wouldn't ask them some hokey question where they have, you know, a cue card, you know, answer. I have an hourglass in front of you, Mr. Obama and Mr. McCain. What does this hourglass symbolize to you? And what does it have to do with the American people? Well, I don't really know if either of them would answer it in a way that would make sense. As you know, one part of the hourglass is always full, and one part of the hourglass is always empty. And then that's a cycle of fullness and emptiness, and they follow each other. It's true in an hourglass, emptiness to fullness and fullness to emptiness. It's true in an hourglass, and it's full in our own souls, just like in life. Joy and sadness often following each other in a cycle. Joy, sadness, emptiness, fullness. And it's important for you to know that the hourglass symbolizes something else. The hourglass symbolizes the cycle between life and death, between heaven and earth. And why is it important for me to recognize this and to try to have the candidates recognize that there's a cycle, a continual cycle between life and death? And just as a common plant will go through a cycle of life and death, a common ant will go through a cycle of life and death, a dog or a cat will go through a cycle of life and death, a mother or a father or a sister or a brother or a son or a daughter is also going to go through that cycle of life and death, but so too do nations go through a cycle of life and death. Many nations have come and many nations have gone, Mr. Obama. Many nations have come and many nations have gone, Mr. McCain. What does the hourglass symbolize to you? Well, of course, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, thank you for listening to my little soliloquy on the hourglass. But as you well know, neither candidate would answer that question. They would think, in fact, anyone who asks them such a question is a crackpot or crazy. But if you know even a modicum of history, you know that, well, republics have come and republics have gone. Nations that are evil have come and nations that are evil have gone. And we are somewhat between those two antipodes. We're not a purely good nation. We're not a purely evil nation. I think we're more to the good than we are to the evil, for sure, especially when compared with the despotic nations that we see today, whether they be Syria or Iran or North Korea or even China, which allegedly is a capitalist communist nation, But behind the scenes, there's a lot more going on that we don't want to see and we don't want to know. And with a little help from their friends in the government media complex, we never will see or know what goes on in any of these nations. But getting back again to the meaning of the hourglass, remember what I just said to you. It symbolizes life and death, fullness and emptiness. And just as every living thing is born to die, so too is every nation. Which candidate will keep this nation alive longer?
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I was talking about an hourglass. I got sidetracked. Why? Because I told you after the election is over, no matter who wins and who loses, we're going to go on with our life, as has gone on even in nations that have disappeared as nations, or let us say empires that disappeared. The people are still there, one way or the other. I mean, unless you're conquered and slaughtered, a nation goes on. You know, that's how it works. And then people have to make the most of their lives. And believe me, there's more to life than talking about politics. It's always been the same for me. I mean, I'm interested in politics now because it's happening, but, you know, that's not what my show has always been about. Certainly it's a part of it, borders, language, culture. I didn't hear much of that coming up in either of the conventions, did you? Did you hear much about borders, language, or culture last night? I'm sorry, I missed it. Or during the Democrats, you know you never heard anything about borders, language, and culture because they're against borders. They're against the English language as being the sole language of America. In fact, in Democrat districts like in San Francisco, ballots for voting are in 7, 8, 9 languages. What does that have to do with the United States of America? I'm the son of an immigrant. But in order to vote, when my grandfather came over, you had to learn English or else you weren't allowed to vote. Why? They figured if you weren't willing to learn English, you didn't have the right to vote. If you weren't willing to take the time to learn the language of the land, then you're not entitled to vote because you don't know anything. You're just a moron just going in there being told what to do. Now, why would the liberals, the Democrats, want ballots in 8 or 9 languages, as you will see not only in San Francisco now, but this infection has spread throughout many other cities? Well, that's how they stay alive. If you're a socialist party, you continuously appeal to the have-nots. You grant the have-nots benefits they're not entitled to. When you take them away, you take the benefits from someone. And who is that someone? That would be the hardworking people who've killed themselves to accrue the benefits. And you offer them to the have-nots. And then you need the have-nots to outvote the haves. And so you keep importing them through illegal immigration. You understand how this works? Do you understand what's going on? And that's why I ask you, that's why I said to you in the last segment, the reason they stay away from this show like the plague is because they're afraid of the truth. I don't care who they are. They're not prepared to answer a real question in a real way, number one. And number two, they're not capable of philosophy in any manner. I am. Don't forget for 1 minute that I have a doctorate of philosophy, even though it's in a science. It's called a PhD. It's a doctor of philosophy. I'm a thoughtful person. I've always been this way, even though I was at 5 years old. I was the kid in the neighborhood where they say, gee, you're always thinking this and that. Yeah, well, there are people like me around. I'm not the only one. In fact, philosophy is apparently very popular in certain parts of America. Did I see any philosophy at the Democrat convention? No. Did I see any philosophy at the other convention? No. Do I see any philosophy in the media? No. It's not allowed. It's considered somewhat suspicious. Anyone who philosophizes is somewhat not loyal to the American way. The American way is to be anti-philosophical. In fact, anyone who is philosophical overly so is certainly suspect. In fact, there's something wrong with a philosopher today, and they should be given medication. You must have medication if you think too much. It means something's wrong with you. The smart man, the good man, the wise man doesn't think. No, he just speaks without thinking. He follows the herd. In fact, he makes believe he isn't part of the herd, but in fact, he is the herd. Anyway, that's enough. I've said all I want to say. PCDS, post-convention disorder syndrome. Palm Beach, Mike, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, God bless you. I love discussing philosophy, and I love listening to yours.
Well, thank God there's at least one person left in America who doesn't want a little hackneyed phrase of, Democrats bad, Republicans good.
I strongly agree with the Ayn Rand concept that everyone needs philosophy and everyone lives by a philosophy. They just don't realize that they are because they don't think about it. I wanted to get back to your hourglass analogy and offer you a different perspective on the hourglass. It doesn't have to be vertical. You can place it horizontally and stop time, if you will, and just think.
That is so good. I love that. That's a brilliant concept. I don't think it's original, but it's really good.
No.
So in a way, how do you stop time in life, though?
Well, you don't. You continue thinking, but your thoughts can transcend time.
Yes, okay, there are timeless thoughts. And I think that religion enters the discussion right here, doesn't it? Mike, are you still there? No, gone. See, that wasn't even a caller. That was I was using a false voice and projecting it like Paul Witt. I'm joking. I don't know why I really don't know why he hung up. Sometimes I wonder if there's like astral projection or, you know, like UFOs land and they listen to talk radio. Maybe they get bored. You ever think maybe the little green men get bored? They have to call the only people in America who are still thinking and using their minds. They're like, hello, let me call that show. I don't know who the guy was. I don't know if he was real, but he called the show and he said something. I never even thought of it. I'm looking at my hourglass now. I turned it over at 20 after the hour and already, yeah, it's about an hourglass. That's what's called an hourglass. How do you like How do you like that? So we'll go back to the basic now. That's all. Democrats or independents, have you decided to vote for McCain because of what you've seen over the last couple of weeks? That's a basic. It's good. It's actually a good question, only I could come up with. It says it all. Boca Raton. Michael, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Yes. I'm a 34-year voting, recovering Democrat. And my decision to vote for McCain really goes way back before the convention. It began with one person alone, and that was Lieutenant Colonel Alan West here in Florida. I met him several months ago. My wife and I met him and heard him speak. He was at an event where the challenger, the incumbent Ron Klein, failed to show up and refuses to come out and debate. And we were basically lit up in a way that I've been inspired by no other way in politics in my adult life. And that.
So you're saying you were inspired to vote Republican because the Democrat was so arrogant he wouldn't even debate?
Arrogant is not even the word. You know, Obama has $500 million and refuses to accept campaign finance. Ron Klein has $3 or $4 million and refuses to come out of his bunker to debate Colonel Alan West.
Well, Oprah Winfrey, the great, fair-minded Oprah Winfrey, refuses to have Miss Palin on her show. What does that tell you about Oprah Winfrey?
She's already the die is already cast. You know, she can't. She may be applauding Governor Palin on one sense, but in the other sense, she's committed. So she really can't. She's locked.
Well, I would think it's. You want me to raise a very important flag here? Is it racist of Oprah Winfrey to have had Obama on and not have Palin on? What else would you say this is based upon?
Well, I'd say that the old Democratic premise is based on racism.
You know, racism works across several different races. It's not limited to the white people.
Obama.
Now, why would Oprah Winfrey say, I've had Obama on, but I'm not going to have Palin on? Why?
Because
Is she a biased woman? Is she prejudiced in any way? Why, we can't ask that either? That's also a difficult question to answer. It's absolutely true, by the way. That's all. There you go. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go up to New York City. WOR calls. Paul, go ahead, please.
Hello, Michael. I think that one caller was getting a lethal injection. I think his last request was to talk to you. That one guy.
Oh, God. Oh, the guy who said you put the hourglass on the side? That's funny.
You're not an announcer for a political party. That's why me and a lot of millions of people listen to you, because you have a great – you could talk about where you ate in a restaurant the night before. It's entertaining.
I could. I absolutely could, and I do. And trust me, I do, Paul.
I understand the business where you have to have sponsors, but I hope you're around for a long time and just talk about whatever you do every day. It's a great thing. You know?
That's very nice of you to say, Paul. I really mean that. Now, let's go to the basic question. Which party do you think will keep America alive longer?
Well, the Conservative Party, I think, if whatever's left of it, you know.
Yes, it's gone. It's gone with the wind. In fact, I'm thinking of changing the name of my show from the Savage Nation to the Middle Nation.
one thing about illegal immigration, not one thing about language, you know. It's like a big parade, you know, big show, Super Bowl, you know. Anyway, you're great, Mike.
I happen to love hardworking people. I don't care what language they speak. I don't care what color their skin is. I happen to know very much about hard work. I also respect it. I love family values. So no one has to sell me on that. But if you're going to grant amnesty to illegals, can you at least tell me that you're going to end the anchor baby racket? Can you at least tell me you're also going to deport the 30% of prisoners who happen to be illegal aliens and get them out of our beautiful country? Get them out of the prisons. Deport them to the countries of origin. Just get them out of this country. One out of three prisoners is an illegal alien. Why doesn't McCain at least say, I'll deport the prisoners, the illegal alien prisoners who have come here and committed felonies? Why doesn't he say, I'm going to grant amnesty to the illegal aliens because they're hardworking and we love them and they're all human and we're all human, blah, 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 but we're going to end the anchor baby game because we can't afford it? Why didn't I hear any of that last night?
Nothing, not a word.
Nada, 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 de nada, de nada. De nada, senor. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. And I don't want to dwell on it anymore. It's frankly not depressing. It is unbelievably the same old, same old. I've heard it all before. I don't think that we heard anything new from either party. I know that they both have a clear identity. The Democrats are the European Socialist Party of today. The Republicans are the Democrat Party of 30 years ago. There is no Republican Party left. It's gone. In terms of borders, language, and culture, it's disappeared. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back. Savage. Portland, Oregon, Alan, KXL, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I made an observation, and the show was a repeat about a week ago. It went to commercial, and after coming back from commercial, I didn't get to hear your explanation because it changed topics. And the observation had to do between the relationship of the perspective of a child and the elderly. And I also wanted to let you know that that's right in line with Einstein's theory of special relativity, stating basically that time was relative.
You're a very brilliant man, but I have to ask you to repeat the question. You're asking me to tell you what I think about perceptions of reality, the difference of perceptions of reality of a child and an adult, or a child and an old person?
Well, you made an observation, and I've made the same observation, where I think you were sitting on your boat, and you said it kind of hit you that when you're a child, everything has the kind of a grand, bigger-than-life kind of feel to it, and then when you get maybe like I'm in my 30s, where everything becomes really mundane, and then
how a child sees the world. Well, I have a dog who has to substitute for a child, and so his perceptions are different than a child's. But you know, you watch a dog react to things, and you see to a dog every sound is bigger than life. Okay. It's the same to a child. To a child, it's all brand new. So what can you imagine what a rainbow must look like to a child? And as we get older, rainbows still inspire most of us, but we're somewhat jaded. I think that's what you're referring to, that kind of gross interpretation.
It is, but you said the observation was you start to get some of that back. I mean, as
when?
Time goes on, you start to, you know, smell the roses.
Oh, you're saying that as you get older, some of it comes back? Yeah, well, maybe I was in one of those moods for a minute. Maybe I don't know why it hit me. You're saying that I said that I was feeling some of those things I felt as a child again?
Correct. I mean, that's what you were saying.
Could have been I had enough B3 that day. I don't really know. I don't have any explanation. It could have been the niacin.
But I mean, but that is right in line with Einstein's special theory of relativity, where he basically...
How so? What does he say?
He basically boils it down to where he's basically stating that time's relative. It's relative to the perspective of the person watching the train versus the person on the train. How time.
Well, there's another analogy which my friend, a physicist, repeated on radio last week, where he said the issue of monkeys on a typewriter. You know, monkeys are dancing on the keys of a typewriter, and letters are typed, and people think that the monkeys are typing the letter. But in fact, they're just randomly dancing on the keys of a typewriter. Does that more or less fit?
No, I'm not really sure if that's really what I'm trying to convey. But
let's take the analogy of monkeys dancing on the keys of a typewriter. That would be the news people today, the journalists. that because they're typing letters that are somewhat literate, meaning that they're spelled correctly and they make sentences, they think that they're writing the news. But it has no relationship to what the news really is.
I do.
Or let's go back to Plato, where Plato said most of us don't see reality. We only see the shadows on the wall. Does that work for you?
That's closer. Like I said, it was just an explanation of an observation you made. I do remember being a child. I do remember every once in a while.
Oh, you're saying because I said that you were able to relate back to being a child yourself and remember what it was like to be a child. I think most of us occasionally, when we're super relaxed and we're really in a state of calm, we can sometimes look back and look for a moment the way we saw it. We can see the world as we did as a child. I think that's true. Thank you for the – I don't know what to say on that. I think it does happen, you know, to people. I don't know. Sometimes I say things on the show and I can't remember saying them and I can't recall what I said. You know, you talk about 15 years of conversation. I wish I could have that kind of recall. I don't. I'm very lucky, though, we have good archives, the crew for my show, Phil and Beowulf. I mean, they're really great guys, and they can almost access anything immediately. If I say, do you remember when blah, 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 they can hit? It's not yet that well, you know, organized, but they know it by now. They know me very, very well. I have to thank them for that. Guys, do you know what he's referring to? I wish you could find it for me for tomorrow. Ottawa, Tom, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Yeah, I'm calling to support your debunking global warming piece that you have on your homepage. I've worked with hundreds of climate scientists for the last 10 years in many countries, and quite frankly, there is no consensus about the causes of climate change. A lot of the stuff that we hear, unfortunately, in the press tells us that there's this consensus, and so many of the scientists are actually very reluctant to speak out. But, you know, what you're doing and what others are doing are hopefully creating a climate where more scientists can actually say what they're really finding.
Yes, it's a little site on michaelsavage.com, which is called Debunking Global Warming, and the headline says, less than half of published scientists endorse global warming theory. That doesn't stop charlatans like Al Gore from saying all scientists, virtually all scientists agree. It doesn't stop politicians like Jerry Brown, the attorney general of the state of California, going on NPR 2 weeks ago and infuriating me by saying all scientists agree that global warming is real and it's caused by man, and we now have to constrain industry in the hands of government. And they don't permit anyone on NPR to get up there and say, now, wait a minute, less than half of published scientists endorse global warming theory. It's amazing, the big lie. But then, as Goebbels said, when you tell a big lie often enough, it becomes the truth. Right now, the liberals are telling the big lie, and they've turned it into a half-truth, which they take as the whole truth.
And I'm saying to media that frequently bring this up, I'm saying, prove it. Show us that there is a consensus in the climate science community. And they can't do it because there is no worldwide poll, and the IPCC only represents a very small fraction of the world's scientists. So,
right.
In fact,
and you know, one of the I got to tell you this, one of the best, you could take the average person who doesn't know science, and if you go on to Greenland Ice Yields Hope on Climate, to me, that was one of the most important recent discoveries, yet it's never been broadcast by the media. It was an international team of scientists, multinational team of scientists. They worked for years. You know the one. They bored 1.2 miles into the Greenland ice shelf. They pulled up the remnants, the DNA of plants and animals that lived eons ago. And guess what they discovered? The Earth was warmer eons ago than it is today. How can they then say that it's we causing this uptick in global warming? There may be an uptick in global warming, but it's not we who are doing it. That is not to argue that I like pollution. I hate pollution. I'm a boater. I'm a hiker. I'm an outdoorsman. I despise people who poison the airs, waters, and places. But I also despise liars who try to to gain control of every aspect of industry around the Western world under the guise of global warming in order to simply induce a soft market Marxism. Thanks for the call. The book that I know you've all been waiting for, Psychological Nudity, is the title. And here we are, 75 stories from Michael's colorful life history are contained in this limited first edition printing. And you can go to michaelsavage.com and you're going to see the picture of me holding Teddy, my dog. The classic stories I've told on the radio were translated for the written word. And I have to say translated for obvious reasons, because the spoken word and the written word are two different mediums. They're not the same. One-Armed Frank, Love by the Sewer Plant, Dead Man's Pants, Savage's Childhood Diet, that's a prescription for a heart attack. Tippy the dog dies and is thrown into a garbage truck. When Pasta Was Spaghetti, From Immigrant Son to Radio Stardom, and many more favorites are in this book, 75, by the way. Are there political stories? A few. The medical reason why liberalism is a mental disorder. Debunking man-induced global warming. Republicans should treat voters like restaurant customers. Psychological nudity. It's a must for everyone who's read a Savage book. It's an original. Kindly go to michaelsavage.com, review the cover, click, and there it is, and I'll know how many you print.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives.
I'm a proud Hillary Clinton Democrat. She had the experience and judgment to be president. Now, in a first for me, I'm supporting a Republican, John McCain. I respect his maverick and independent streak, and now he's the one with the experience and judgment. A lot of Democrats will vote McCain. It's okay, really.
I'm John McCain, and I approve this message.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. Put your bad rags on. Join me, home. We'll have some fun when the clock strikes. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. We're gonna rock, rock, rock till broad daylight.
It is the one and only Savage Nation. I am dragging myself through the PCDS illness that I'm suffering from, the post-convention disorder syndrome. And I really feel that, you know, both candidates left me down because they didn't address PCDS. I mean, they talked about other things, less important things such as war and peace and the economy and things like that. But PCDS is affecting all of America today, and it will for the next few days. And I think that neither McCain nor Obama has addressed PCDS, post-convention disorder syndrome, adequately. And certainly we need funding. We demand funding. We want research on PCDS. And we want treatment for PCDS. Because we, the American people, are just debilitated from post-convention disorder syndrome. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Here we are. I'm dead. It's the end of the... I'm dead from this. I don't know about you. I really am dead. Maybe it's a combination of the hot heat wave we have out here, not global warming. It's a heat wave. The fog's coming back here on the West Coast next. I can't wait. Oh, I can't wait. The heat's horrible. Just hot. I don't know how people live in the heat. I don't get it. Anyway, that's my problem, not yours. The main question was, there were a lot of questions I raised over the last couple of hours. Any Democrats or independents, have you decided to vote for McCain because of what you've seen over the last couple of weeks? That was question number one. Number two, is Oprah Winfrey a racist? Or let's say prejudiced. I mean, she has Obama on, but she won't have Palin on? Excuse me? Fairness? Openness? I was never a fan of Oprah Winfrey. I always thought she was a blowhard and overblown blowhard. And a big deal, Oprah Winfrey, a real genius. She'll be remembered in history for her great knowledge and great contributions to civilization. New York City, WOR, Jim, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Michael, Jim, yes, here, sir. From New York City. I'm 28 years old, and the reason I'm calling is I'm a little disappointed in your sort of attitude today.
Okay, I'll take the bait. How so, sir?
Because I'm a young guy, and I've been listening to you for the last 8 years, and by you saying that you may want to get off the radio within the next year, I just think you underestimate the power that you have here in America for the people in America. And I know right now I'm talking for a lot of your listeners, as you're just for what you do to just the general population and the general person, you're underestimating the power that you have. You always say, I'm one man, I have one opinion, but you don't understand the influence and the power and the impact that you have to the American people. I just wanted to...
Well, all right. You know, I tell you the truth, I do. I do underestimate it. All I hear is a lot of negative, and I'm sick of it, frankly. I'm getting beaten up by negativity, and I don't need this. I'm going to walk away if it keeps up. I'm not going to take it. I have options. I can walk away and never be heard from again. And frankly, the conservative movement was killed by George Bush, as evidenced by the by McCain's speeches. I know what's coming, and a lot of people don't want to hear me say it, but they're going to be agreeing with me. All the people who are attacking me now for not supporting McCain enough, I can guarantee you by June of 2009, they're going to say, you know what? You were 100% right. We should have demanded more out of John McCain. We shouldn't have given the Republicans another blank check.
But, Michael, what I'm saying is you have to think outside of the box, outside of politics. You are not a political person like you were talking philosophy earlier, is that you are just a American icon where people go to listen to you, not just for the political thought that you have. It's for the general knowledge, the encyclopedic knowledge that you have. And
wow.
It's so
well, that's really amazing. Jim, you're a great kid. You want a job? I mean, you should work for me.
I just want to express this because I've been listening to you for so many years and you've been...
What do you do for a living? I'm curious. I mean, you don't have to disclose it if you don't want. What do you do?
I'm fine with doing that. I'm in sales in New York City here in Manhattan.
There's a career in that. And if you lived in San Francisco and you didn't have a job, I'd hire you as a producer in a minute. But I got to tell you, Jim, what you just said is exactly what's missing right now in the feedback that I've been getting. And that's okay. I understand it. The entire pack in the media have been running in either the Democrat or Republican directions. And it's exhausting, to be honest with you, to watch this and to hear this constant harping that I'm not loyal to the Republican Party. You're helping support Obama. Well, you know what? That's not true. What's true is that John McCain was a failed hack 6 months ago. And now suddenly, because he's been elevated to Godhead by the Republican puppet masters, and he hasn't changed one iota of his middle-of-the-road opinions, doesn't mean I suddenly have to salute him, does it?
No. But, Michael, what's true is you're the voice of millions of people, and millions of people listen to you every single night. Just to hear what your story is, not about the politics, about your dog.
All right, so let's say this happens. Let's say that after the election is over and I say I've had enough of it, which we will all have had enough of it, and, you know, short of a war or whatever, we still have to do talk radio, and I go back to my old kind of ways. It's like talking about what I did last night, the restaurant, my observations. Is that something you as a 28-year-old would still tune in for?
Without question. You have been an inspiration. It's not that when you connect history to what's going on currently. No one else is doing that. No one.
Well, I could connect history in a head of garlic. You give me a garlic clove and I'll give you a history lesson and a political one at that, as well as a medical lesson. There is nobody else doing that. I am the ultimate Renaissance man on radio, and I appreciate you for reminding me of who I actually am. I'm going to give you a gift, Jim. I've got only one thing I can give you. It's the thing I love more than anything right now in the material world, and that's my new autobiography, Psychological Nudity. So if you'll stay on the line, we'll get Jim's address. It'll go to my fulfillment house in Florida, and Jim will get it. The first couple of copies that are going to go out are going to go out October 15th. Thank you very much, Jim. That was really great. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com is the website. Coming up next is an interview I did earlier with a great guy, Robert Spencer, on an astonishing story in New York City about the New York Police Department putting extra security to guard mosques for the coming holiday of Ramadan. Now, why they need this extra security has never been stated, but it worries me that they would spend all of this time guarding mosques from unknown threats and not protect us from the Wahhabi brand of Islam that is being taught in some of these mosques. I think there's a greater threat personally from the Wahhabism being taught in the mosques in New York City than is the threat against the mosques, which, as far as I know, is rather small. But I think that the threat from the Wahhabism brand of Islam is rather great. Do you feel protected? Do you feel either party has addressed this issue of the growing threat of radical Islam right here in America? Listen and find out. Savage. Everyone knows that Islamic supremacist teaching is going on in too many mosques today. We just learned that the New York Police Department is actually going to increase security around mosques for Ramadan, but not for the reasons you might think. Uh-huh. Robert Spencer is the director of Jihad Watch and joins us today to talk about what is going on here. Robert Spencer, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for having me on. It is great to be in one of the last bastions of free speech, and my hat is off to you, and it's always a pleasure to be here.
So why is the New York Police Department increasing security around the mosques for Ramadan?
Yeah, well, this was an announcement that caught my eye in the New York Daily News, and it said that the NYPD is planning to increase security around mosques for Ramadan. And so I saw that, and I thought, hey, great, they're finally not being politically correct, and they're going to acknowledge the fact that mosques have been the site of jihadist activity around the world, and even in the United States on occasion, and that therefore it is only fitting and proper that we take cognizance of this fact, especially around Ramadan, when there is a demonstrable increase in jihadist activity year by year. And so I thought that they were going to be guarding us from the activity in the mosques. But actually, as it turned out when I read the article, they're going to be guarding the mosques against the supposed Islamophobes who supposedly attack mosques and never actually have done so, and most of the supposed hate crimes that the Council on American Islamic Relations has produced over the years have been shown to be trumped up. But nonetheless, the NYPD is obediently going to be protecting mosques during Ramadan instead of protecting us from jihadists in the mosques.
So instead of paying attention to what is being taught inside the mosques, we are protecting the outside from some unknown potential threat of some kind?
Yeah. And there is no outside threat. You know, Americans are a wonderfully tolerant people in reality, and we hold to the principle that one is innocent until proven guilty. But that doesn't mean that we ought to be blind. I mean, as long ago as 1999, a Muslim leader, Sheikh Mohammed Hisham Kabbani himself, told the State Department that 80% of American mosques were controlled by extremists. The same thing was affirmed by another terrorism expert in 2005. The Saudis pour money, as much as $80 billion, into radicalizing mosques in the United States and around the world over the last few years. The Center for Religious Freedom has found hate propaganda against Jews and Christians taught in mosques in the United States. It is still going on. And so why should we assume that there's never going to be any effect to this hateful teaching coming out of American mosques? As a matter of fact, the 1999 valedictorian of the Islamic Saudi Academy, which has been investigated for this exact hate propaganda, was a young man named Ahmed Omar Abu Ali, who is now doing 30 years in prison for joining an al-Qaeda plot to kill George W. Bush.
No.
Now, don't you think that comes from some things that he learned in the mosque, in his school? And so it's really that there ought to be guards around these places to protect us from them, not the other way around.
Has there ever been a major attack like they're guarding against on a mosque?
No. There have been a series of small incidents. There was an incident in which allegedly the head of a pig was rolled into a mosque in Maine. There were several other incidents that turned out to be trumped up. There is a very interesting and important expose that's easily found online called CARES Hate Crimes Nonsense. And it is by Daniel Pipes and Sharon Chadha. They show that a lot of the supposed hate crimes that the Council on American Islamic Relations has adduced over the years to buttress their claim to victim status for Muslims in the United States have actually been wildly exaggerated or actually trumped up and fabricated out of whole cloth. And that needs to be kept in mind, that, you know, victim status in the United States is a political counter. It's a thing that gives you political power. And that's what they're jockeying for by trying to claim this. But in reality, mosques are not in danger in the United States. Mosques have not been attacked in the United States. And Muslims are not in danger in the United States. As a matter of fact, they enjoy more freedoms here than they do in most Muslim countries.
It seems the officials are more terrified of Islamophobia than the terrorists that might be being bred.
Oh, that's very true. That's very true. And yet Islamophobia is a completely trumped up, fabricated, and politically manipulative concept. There would be no Islamophobia. We would not be having this conversation right now, and there would be nobody who cared about any Muslim going about his business in the United States were it not for the fact that on a more or less regular basis, there are Muslims who commit acts of violence and justify them according to Islamic teachings. And that's why people are suspicious of Muslims, and rightfully so. And this suspicion is only compounded by the fact that Muslim groups in the United States, faced with this, have not renounced the terrorist acts, have not renounced the Islamic doctrines that have led to the terrorist acts, but instead have trumped up this spurious concept of Islamophobia and pointed the finger at people who are trying to guard against and prevent more terrorist acts.
How did we get here, Robert? How did we lose our focus since 9/11?
I think that right away, the Islamic groups in the United States started a full court press to condemn any honest investigation of the elements of Islam that jihad terrorists use to justify their actions and gain recruits among Muslims as bigotry and racism. And bigotry and racism, really the hot button issues in the United States. If you are portrayed as a bigot or a racist, that's it for you. Forget it. You are radioactive. And so they have very skillfully intimidated even supposedly fearless, anti-politically correct conservative voices into thinking that if they say anything about how the elements of Islam that are being manipulated and used in this way, then they will be bigots and racists. And so they don't say anything about these things. And this is a grave failing on their part because it enables the Islamic jihadists to continue to use Islamic texts and teachings more or less unchallenged. It enables these spurious moderate groups like the Council on American Islamic Relations to continue to pose as moderate groups more or less unchallenged. And those who challenge them are marginalized and sidelined as bigots. When actually, this has nothing to do with bigotry. This has nothing to do with racism. This is a struggle against a totalitarian and supremacist ideology that people of all races subscribe to. And Ibrahim Hooper, who is a blonde-haired, blue-eyed Norwegian from the Middle West, is no less dangerous because he is white and blonde and blue-eyed. He wants to see an Islamic government in the United States. He has said so. And so he is just as much of a threat to U.S. constitutional rule as somebody of a different race who holds to the same Islamic supremacist ideology. This is an ideological thing, not a racial thing. But they have successfully hoodwinked the vast majority of the mainstream media, both liberal and conservative, into thinking that this is a racial issue and so tiptoeing around it, which allows the Islamic supremacists essentially a free hand.
Yeah, just another example of political correctness, political insanity, undermining America.
Definitely, absolutely. And what's really shameful about it is that the so-called conservative standard bearers are just as politically correct as the leftist mainstream media in this regard.
Robert Spencer, thanks for being on the Once Savage Nation.
Savage.
Listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
What's the worst year of my life so far? Never thought about it that way. What's the best year of my life so far? Give me a little Mel Allen. It's a high fly ball. I want to go back to my childhood. That's it. I want to live in the past. Oh, thank you, Mel. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, walking around with a transistor radio, crew-cut haircut, a little kid with corduroy pants, innocent, no sexual feelings, nothing. All that was on my head was baseball, but now it's a different story. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? There's so many problems. Who asked for this? I should disappear into the ethers. White Hat, West Palm Beach, Jupiter. Maybe I should go to Jupiter instead of Jupiter, Florida. You know that most of America walks around like they don't even know what's going on. They don't know where Iran is. If you said Iran, Ahmadinejad, Hitler, they wouldn't know if you were talking about a baseball team or if you were talking about science fiction. They go to malls. All they want to do is jingle bells. Can you blame them? It's the way most people are, actually, when you think about it. So why can't I be like most people? Answer, because I never was. I've always had the weight of the world on my shoulders. Even when I was a little kid in the Bronx, they said, that one has the weight of his shoulders, the weight of the world on his shoulders. That one has the weight of the world on his shoulders. That one. They always said that one. Can you play See the USA in a Chevrolet with Donna? What's her name? Donna Reed. I want to hear See the USA.
See That's the all. USA in your
That's
Chevrolet.
It.
America is asking you to call.
That's when there still was a Chevrolet.
America's the greatest land of all.
And they made the, turn it off already. It's another time. You know, it's like Gillette, Friday Night Fights. Everything was different. It was a different world. So 2007 hasn't been too great for me. I wouldn't say horrible, okay? Horrible is death. Horrible is a family member dying. Horrible is a dog getting run over by your own car in the driveway. Horrible is the doctor tells you you have bowel cancer and 6 months to live. Horrible is an emergency room. So I'm not complaining, don't get me wrong. But I am in my own way. I am in my own way. Do you see the latest story out here? Bush comes up with a mortgage plan that will freeze certain subprime interest rates for 5 years. Now, on the face of it, you say, wow, how compassionate. A three-pronged solution to stem the flow of mortgage foreclosures. Now, let me ask you something. How many of these who are about to go into foreclosure are illegal aliens? Has anyone asked that question but me? Answer, no. The government, as you well know, was forcing banks to lend to people who were not only illegal aliens, but unqualified for a mortgage. And if they didn't lend, if the banks didn't lend the money to people who didn't qualify, they were going to be sued by various divisions of the U.S. government. Now they're about to go belly up, and who's going to bail them out? The very same government that said, you must lend money to them. Now, who's going to pay for the bailout? You and I. You and I. Now, what about stronger lending standards? Like when I was young and I wanted to get a mortgage, I couldn't afford one. They wouldn't give me one. Why? Because I couldn't qualify. Why couldn't I qualify? I didn't have sufficient income. Therefore, I couldn't buy a house. But you see, everything's changed in the new PC America. And so you have a socialist-light government that said to banks for years, you lend money to illegal aliens or we will sue you. In fact, you can't even ask the so-called citizenship status of a potential borrower or we'll sue you for racism. So the banks were over a barrel. They said, but. The government said, we'll give it to you in the you-know-what unless you lend it to the illegal alien and unless you lend it to people who don't qualify. So now we have a so-called subprime crisis, and no one's talking about it. So Michael Savage again asks the question it's a question no one is going to ask. How many of these people in a subprime mortgage crisis are illegal aliens? How many of these people are those that banks were forced to lend to? But it doesn't stop Bush in clip 31 from telling us we have to pay for it. Listen.
Some lenders made loans that borrowers did not understand, especially in the subprime sector.
Well, hold on. Some lenders made loans that borrowers didn't understand? Is the president fooling you? What's there not to understand? Now he's taking the side of the people who they were forced to lend money to. Could you do me a favor and explain to the audience through music why I said 2000 is a very bad year? And so in order to do that, you have to play three things for me in this order. You have to play Mel Allen, you have to play Johnny Philip Morris, and then you have to come back to me with a doo-wop song. Go ahead, see if you can do that.
The drive hits the deep right field. That ball is going. It is gone.
Get work.
Come in, Berlin. Secret message. Come in, Berlin. Berlin, come in. Berlin, calling Berlin. This is a secret coded message to the right wing in America. It's dip, 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 dip. If you read the first letter of each word and reverse them with lemon juice, you'll see what I'm actually saying. Come in, Berlin. Berlin, come in. Crazy leftists. They actually keep saying, I'm tearing this off. I don't go for this. Now, the first mortgage that this family ever got was my father in 1954 or 5. He bought a house for $14,500 in Queens, New York. And the mortgage, you had to put down, I think, 20 or 25% at the least in those days, right? So what did he have to put down, like $3,000? It was a lot of money in those days. And then he took out a mortgage, and then he paid off the house. He had to qualify for the mortgage, and if he couldn't qualify, they wouldn't have given it to him. And he paid off the house, and that was the end of it. In those days, my father wouldn't buy a car on time because he said that was cheating. Can you imagine the thoughts of those guys in those days? A mortgage you had to pay off because who had cash to pay a whole house off? Nobody. Unless you worked for some people on a certain street that you ate spaghetti on. But the fact is, nobody really that we knew had those kind of cash in the wallpaper in Belrose, Queens. So we didn't, and you had to take a mortgage. But the fact of the matter is, a car was another story. You bought a used car and you paid cash. Why? Because if you bought it on time, you were cheating. And you couldn't really afford it, and you were a faker. That means 99.9% of the people on the road today wouldn't have a car. I mean, you got to be crazy not to pay a car off, you know?
Savage.
Play the Hawaiian music. Maybe it'll calm me down for a second, because I almost got excited. The dog's asleep. Talking with Teddy here, instead of Travels with Charlie, talking with Teddy. Not bad. He likes listening to the show. He didn't want to go to work today. He wanted to stay here with me. Wanted to stay on the couch. He knows tonight after... All right, they got the picture ready with that rotten music. He knows what's coming tonight. After a trip, I don't want to eat out now for a week, so I'll cook at home. And he knows when I cook at home, he eats like a Roman emperor. Whatever I eat, he gets. If I make a potato, he gets the potato. If I make a chicken, he gets the chicken. If I make a bean, he gets the bean. I try to give him more of the beans than the flesh because they got the chips they eat today. Had my first dog had chips, he'd be alive probably another 10 years, but they ate garbage in those days, the dogs of my day. They fed him kennel ration. I have nothing against the product. I think it was ground up horse hooves or something, and it was nothing. You never gave him a grain or a vegetable. In fact, I once tried to feed that dog a vegetable. My father yelled at me, "Don't give him a vegetable. They don't eat it." "What do you mean they don't eat it? We eat it. We're not dogs. They're made for meat, only meat. Don't you dare give them a carrot." Well, they like it. "No, don't give him. You'll poison him. He doesn't have the stomach for it." God, the things they didn't know in those days. But I try to slip him a vegetable now and again to keep him. I figured he liked it. A horse eats a carrot. Why couldn't a dog eat a carrot, I figured, or a green bean from the plate that I didn't want? "No, only the meat. The meat. The meat he likes. The meat. To give him heavy, fatty. Well, leftovers, what I leave over, the greasy stuff that I won't eat, that with the bone give him." 9 years old, dead, a heart attack. Even then, the hard dog even had a heart attack from the kitchen food. I told you, stiff on the rug in Queens. Terrible moment. My mother was crying. We came, well, because after we had a brother who was sick and I love him dearly, I would have killed for him. And I wouldn't let anyone hurt him. So don't tell me I'm insensitive. It's usually you rats who never even lived through it who are the most insensitive pigs. But you're quick on the internet like a lynching mob. That's all you do. You losers in your undershirts. You bloggers. All you do is sit there like a lynch mob. You're all brave with your keypads. Everyone's no good but you. So after 9 years, even if he was a little vicious and bit me through to the bone, you come down, and you see the creature stiff on the rug, on a green rug, unmoving, and my mother's crying. "What happened? What happened?" "I don't know. He's dead. He's dead." "What do you mean he's dead? Look, look." And she touched his legs. He must have been dead hours because he was already rigid on the rug. "All right, Ma, get away. Get away, Ma. Let me see." And you touch. You touch not directly because you're afraid he could be like in a fit and snap and rip your throat out because he was a vicious dog. You figured maybe he was, like, knocked out, he had an epileptic attack, whatever. So you don't right away touch the whole body because it could spring into action and kill you. You touch the foot, like, from a distance with your hand. So if he snaps, you only lose a hand, not like your entire life. I'm just playing with it. No, you did. You touched the foot, and it was rigid. It had the feeling when you touch the foot of the dead dog on the pad of the foot. It had the equivalent feeling of like a broom, like a small broom laying there. So what are you going to do? So she called the ultimate authority had to be called yet. He was still asleep. It was not yet time to go to work. And he gave the edict like Caesar. All right, it's finished. It's over. Boom. Calling the garbage men. What? That's what they did. There was no pet cemeteries with weeping and crying and cremation and jars that people have. I'm soft-headed, too. I got a jar at the last door with his picture. The whole thing changes. You go along with it or you wind up crazy altogether. So now I have a box with the dog's ashes in it. I'm sure the ashes in there are not from my dog. I guarantee you they gave it from a leaf they burned somewhere. Those crooks in those crematoria. Like they give you your dog's ashes. Oh, yeah, here's your dog's ashes, sure. They didn't burn a leaf from... They probably got it from the park. From a drunk parkie that set the leaves on fire when he fell over in an alcoholic stupor with a cigarette. And they went, they told the kid, the half-wit from the neighborhood who worked in the crematorium, go get the ashes from the parkie, roll them out of the leaves, the bum there, and get the leaves, bring them in. You're going to set them out in various dishes, the leaves, the burnt leaves, and I've got 100 dishes for you to do, dummy. 100? Yeah, today by noon, dummy. Go get the leaves and bring them and stuff them. And then each one you put the label on. Here lies Teddy, the dog that he loved so dear. Inside is a burnt leaf. But in those days, as I say, the garbage men came and they wore in those days, the garbage men in New York, the sanitation department they call it today, the garbage men, they wore brown suits that were made of a certain fabric that was so hostile. What would you wear if you were in a garbage truck every day? Today they look like Apaches coming off the truck with tomahawks. In those days, even the garbage men wore a uniform. Albeit it wasn't great. It wasn't designed by DaVinci, but by Boss. It wasn't a Boss suit. Boss worked only for Hitler. They made a nice suit for the Nazis. I think they were Boss designs, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, no, yeah, the one with the big shoulders. They did beautiful uniforms in the 30s. Oh, you could die from them. Gorgeous. But today, they don't wear a uniform. Headbands, bandanas, tomahawks in the back of the garbage truck, speaking languages with tattoos coming off their tongues. You know, it's a different world. But at least today they don't throw a dog in a garbage truck. That's the thing I'm trying to get at. Who would do that today? Nobody. That would be dog abuse. I watch that show at night, like Miami Pet Police. They're like saints to me, people in that business. You know, they usually go into like neighbors, like poverty neighborhoods where they abuse animals like it's part of their culture. They always say they don't know whose dog it was. He ran in. I have no idea. The dog is kept with like welts and the fur ripped off. Barbed wire around his neck, and the guy comes in, they figure he's coming back from an episode holding up a 7-Eleven, and they say to him, hey, Jack, is this your dog? No, he just came in here. I ran, jumped the fence. What dog? Oh, no. Never saw him before. Look, Jack, he's got a car. No, I don't know whose dog. Must be my neighbor's dog. You getting hostile with me? You getting hostile with me? But the guys have a lot of guts in that business with the guns. They take him in. I really admire them today. But you wouldn't, even a guy like that wouldn't throw a dog into a garbage truck. What do they do with him, a guy like that, if one of the dogs finally dies that they used for a pit bull practice? Do they bury them? I don't even know. Do they cook them? What do they do with them? Where do they send them? I don't know. How do they deal with it like a dog they snatch from you after your yard and throw into a pit bull ring somewhere in St. Louis? And when they're through with it, do they bury it or? I really don't know the ins and outs of all of this. I'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Now, let me go back to Maui. First of all, I want to go back to my little grass shack in Kealakekua, Hawaii. Oh, and I have a good note. On Maui, you know the mountain, the famous extinct volcano? Haleakala has not been renamed Haleakala Akbar yet. Haleakala has not yet been renamed Haleakala Akbar. Thank you. It is still Haleakala. Turn it off now. They got the point already. We had a chef schedule for the whole time because they know I hate to go to restaurants. So for me, because I'm such a troubled human being and they know I don't behave well in restaurants, they got a private chef. Okay. Private chef first day, breakfast was good. No problems. No complaints. Actually, excellent. She did a good job. Lunch, a big bear of a man walks in. Excellent cook. He had a few little quirks, like a certain hum that was borderline, could pick up the knife and kill everyone in the house and no one would find you for weeks kind of hum. A big guy with a like if you asked him a question, it was like a huge hum kind of thing with a laugh attached that we all attempted to duplicate over the next 12 hours to see who could do it better. And we had each other doubled up on the floor because the sound was beyond comprehension. I can't repeat it, nor would it be funny to you. However, he was planning a gigantic dinner for us the first night, consisting of so-called local shrimp from his friend, the shrimp magnate. Yeah, okay, well, my friend, they're local shrimp, meal of brick frozen solid, and he leaves them in the sink all day. Right away, I know it's Tomainville. That's to start with. That night, we came back to cook, and something happened on the phone. He had a speed out, and he backed out and drove over the keypad that opens the gate and sped away. And we were locked in, the gate locked shut. Soon thereafter, there arrives the girl cook, the breakfast chef in the group, and she said, he had to go on an emergency, I'm going to cook for you. And the eyes are ready, Maui Wowie combo. Combo Maui Wowie and a few other substances, in my opinion. It looked like she was like laid back for the night with her designated driver somewhere, and she was called in because he had to go away, and now she was there. Now, here's the weird thing. I come into the kitchen and she's there and I'm wearing a clean new yellow like shirt. And I said to her, do you have an apron I could put on for dinner? I don't want to stain my yellow shirt. She turns to me and she says, I like my men dirty and raw. That's how I like my men, dirty and raw. I said, what? She says, that's how you guys are best, dirty and raw. I said, oh, wow. Now, there was another guy in the group, a lot younger than me. I heard that when he reached into the refrigerator for a drink, she put her hands around his back and gave him like a rub job on the back. He got icky over that. So that was number two. So we knew already we're dealing with major league problems in the psycho department. But we figured, you know what? We'll have the meal and forget about it. I'd throw the shrimp over the side to the palm rats because I wasn't going to eat them. Well, I didn't have to bother. I didn't get a chance to eat them. Let me explain why. Because Maui Wowie, and what she's doing in the kitchen there, I have no idea because I left. I went outside to drink wine in the dark. Ready, serve ready, it's dark. We got the appetizer, the entree, Miss Private Chef. We hear her singing, and all of a sudden, boom, a crash, glass shattered. The entire shrimp dish, which must have cost $100 worth of shrimp, was on the floor with broken glass, unsalvageable. I didn't even get up. I knew what. So one of the other people, one of the young ladies, went and came back with the report from the front lines and reported that the shrimp were all on the floor with glass, and Maui Wowie chef was on her hands and knees talking to the shrimp, saying, oh, how are you, little shrimpy poos? Oh, little shrimpy poos, I'm so sorry. I said, oh, my God, did we miss a bullet here? So to make a long story short, it was wine, salad, and bread, which was better than the shrimpy poos, I can guarantee you.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.